Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we brave scanning the net to find all the deep history and lore of cyberpunk.
I'm Toasty, a fixer that's new to Night City with a desire to jump into the details of this gritty setting.
And I'm Genesis, an old school media tech with a love of character deep dives.
Together, we will bring you the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future.
We've got incoming. Let's Delta. Welcome back, Chooms, to another episode of the Cyberpunk Lorecast. I'm your girl, Genesis, and with me, as always, is a dude who knows how to get into a certain wetsuit. Toasty, how you doing, buddy?
I would just like to clarify that Jen does not mean me getting into a wetsuit. I am not actually donning a wetsuit, except maybe in Night City as I replay Judy's romance over and over and over again, because I do. I have a save for that quest specifically.
I do that too. It's a strategic save file, so that way you can just go back and relive the moment whenever you want to. So we have a lot to talk about today, so I think that we should really dive into it quick. I think first I want to go over our little mini lore topic for the day and ask the question, what is cyberpsychosis? Because we've talked a little bit about how you get it, but not really. And then what happens when you start to lose your humanity?
So this is going to be, there's going to be so much to talk about later on this too, specifically. Cyberpsychosis, essentially, is the concept of, like, whenever you mod out your body, like you put so much, like, cyberware into you that you start, like, it starts messing with your brains, essentially all that, like, metal and electronics or whatever just kind of like start causing your brain to kind of not process things the same way, and you eventually just start like slipping and losing pieces of yourself. And I mean, this can result in as we see from the show, and as we will talk about specifically for the first episode we talk about today, resulting in like jitters, hallucinations, kind of lapses of memory, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, murderous rampages, essentially.
So we do see, like, the first person that we see in this series is a cyber psycho.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. You lose your sense of self and everything around you due to overloading your system with cyberware, because you have no organic left in you. You have no organics. The actual human fleshy bits.
Or at least not enough to matter.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping up front. Some fact clearing up. Last week, I said that it was Seether that did a cover of a Michael Jackson song. I was wrong. 100% my bad. It was Saliva. Seether, Saliva, similar. Even similar sounding, like musically.
Never heard of Saliva, though. I will say that.
Okay, I think you would
like them. I know Seether. Never heard of Saliva.
No. I think you would like Saliva. Okay. And also, Maine isn't a dumbass. I have just never heard... I've never heard the term cock sock instead of condom. It just didn't click. So while my mental checklist before leaving the house is keys, wallet, phone, Maine's is wallet, condom, gun. I guess. Yeah.
Well, you don't have to remember your phone. It's in your brain.
True.
So, you know, that leaves room. Keys, yeah. May have like key chips. So I guess that also you don't really need to remember. It's kind of like slotted in. So.
Well, in that case, wouldn't you not need to remember your wallet either? Because that's also a slot. It's also a chip slot.
Maybe. I wonder if they have like separate, like, you know, kind of separate little monetary things. Because I know like the concept that I was like confused about is like, because they do all the transfers and stuff, but I'm like, they do have like cred chips specifically that have eddies on them. Like you just have like a chip like Meredith Stout gives you. Mm-hmm. If you like do that part of the first mission. And so like it's that can't be slotted in because that's like it was actually like a sizable thing. You don't really have a port for that as opposed to like the smaller ones that they can socket. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So I was wrong on that one too. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to try and cover 3 episodes. And let's get into episode number 6, titled after the Alicia Keys song, Girl on Fire, from her 2012 album.
All right, so just to put a quick summary, this episode is all about Maine and mostly about Maine and like him dealing with his cyberpsychosis. So we kind of start off with kind of leaving right where we left off in episode 5. They have the guy. Kiwi is deep diving into his network, essentially trying to find the information that they were hired by Faraday to find. Meanwhile, Maine is starting to lose it. He's cybered out so much, he's getting jitters and he's hallucinating. And Dorio's trying to like help him like keep his head straight, trying to get him to dial back on the cyberware because it's become too much at this point. But he basically goes through like an episode hallucinating, and because it's taking too long for them to find this information, he goes in there and he absolutely beats the crap out of Kiwi. Mm-hmm. Like she's out of commission. He even hits like her mouth off, which I guess that mask that she wears is like implanted into her face because he like hits it off, but like the inside of her face is hollow. So like she doesn't have a mouth, which is interesting. I get like a very interesting thing going on there.
It reminded me of that mission where you go meet Fingers and he's adjusting that woman's jaw.
Mm.
Like that's what it looks. That's what Kiwi looks like.
Yeah. Oh, not Fingers. I hate that guy. So she's out of commission. So they got to bring in Lucy. She's the other net runner to basically pick up where Kiwi wasn't able to succeed before Maine got to her. And they're obviously reticent because, you know, Maine is the problem. He's the one that messed Kiwi up. And Maine tries to leave. David basically tries to check on him, but because Maine is really out of it, he's frankly a dick to David. And meanwhile, Lucy is struggling because she doesn't want to do it because he's the guy they're in there is Arasaka, you know, we'll figure out more details about that later. And, you know, David's like, all right, fine, screw it, we'll leave. And then Lucy basically gets him to tell her to do it. Mm-hmm. Basically, she doesn't want to do it, but she knows she has to do it, so she needs someone else to tell her to do it. So she gets David too, and she goes in. Just her and David are there. The guy starts to wake up and tries to bribe David, essentially, of like, you know, I can get you up the corporate ladder. You know, you should take this deal. And because of that, some weird glitch out thing that he managed to do to himself, it triggers his trauma team alert. So trauma team shows up. They need to get out with the guy still, preferably. But then trauma team gets alerted to like the hostiles in the building, and they find out that or then they call in for NCPD and then Max Tech, and it becomes just a total fight scene. And meanwhile, Maine is absolutely like, he's losing it more and more and more as he's going through his fight, ends up killing Dorio because he's so out of it. And then David tries to save him, and Maine tells him, you know, like, I can't have you here, or you can't be here for this. And David gets away as Maine basically blows up in the entire building with like an absolute fuck ton of Chutu containers.
So that was very rough. So that was a very shortened breakdown of exactly what happens in the episode, but so much emotion goes into so many of those scenes. You know, like you said, the episode starts off with, you know, Maine having a hallucination, and Maine is seeing himself. I don't know if it's a younger version of him or if it's what he would look like today if he had never gotten cyber. So it's very interesting to see.
Yeah. And it's hard to tell. I think it's supposed to be like a younger version, but I don't know. Maybe a day that he like tried to get out and then realized he couldn't or something and went back, and that's when he started making changes to himself.
Yeah.
So it's like he's at the end of, because he's it's also just like kind of like that symbolic thing of like, because he's in that like hallucination, he's running to the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode, he comes to the end of the road for himself.
Oh.
So, Jen, you got a couple notes in here for things that you really liked in the episode.
Yeah, definitely. So, I wanted to say that my favorite line actually appears quite a few times in different variations. And you even touched on it for a moment. My favorite line is Lucy saying, David, tell me I can do it. I need to hear you say it, please. And it's such an emotional bearing of the soul. It's like, I know I can do it, but hearing you say that I can do it will actually give me the courage needed to go deep diving in the net. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right before this, like when she's telling Dorio no, we see that her hand is shaking, like, and it's like actually shaking. It's not like cyber psychosis jitters. It's like shaking from fear, mm-hmm. from something that is scaring her. Something about Arasaka or the guy in that room. She's worried about that, but she knows, you know, she knows she has to do it. So she needs David to tell her to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So after David tells her that she can do it, that he believes in her, there is a funny little line that I wanted to point out. Lucy tells David to grow a chrome spine because now he's the one freaking out about the job. He's not sure if he can handle it. And so we know that he already physically has a chromed out spine.
Has a chrome spine. It's already there, yeah. That's a funny line.
Later, after Lucy has been net running and shit hits the fan, David runs Lucy out to the car because Maine tells him, you need to go get the car ready. because we're getting out of here. Lucy and David argue about going back to help Maine and Dario. And we know that he is going to go back when he says, "Aren't you going to say you believe in me too?" And it breaks my heart. And then while he's struggling to half blur, half physically run up the stairs, he keeps telling himself, "Please tell me I can do this. Tell me I can do this. Tell me I can do this." And it calls back to his mom saying, "I believe in you. I know you can do this. One day you'll make it to the top of Arasaka Tower."
Yeah. Yeah. See? It's also like he's taking after, and this is like something that I want to talk about more in depth just on these kinds of things, which I guess now's as good a point, good a time as any. But I've been watching a lot of like kind of like video essays about the show and like listening to podcasts and stuff where they like review it and talk about things. And one of the things I thought was a real like interesting concept, which I think is honestly just 100% true, is the idea that Maine does this to himself. Because if we harken back to episode 3, when he says nothing, it's not wrong if it makes you stronger for yourself or for your team. And so he chromes himself out so much because Maine's like the thing in his mind is that he needs to protect his team at all costs and that he's willing to sacrifice himself, his mind and his body in order to keep them safe at all costs, which granted it ends up turning on him, you know, like because he does that, it eventually causes him to then harm his team. But, and it's like a similar, and it goes to the similar concept of like, you know, David has looked after Maine. We see this David and Maine's relationship. Like, you know, we don't really know anything about David's father. Mm-mm. They don't tell us anything, but like, he's definitely spent this time looking up to Maine as a mentor, father figure. Maine has very much had like that same role for David of like, you know, teaching him the ropes, making sure that he knows how to protect himself, even like teasing him some and stuff like what a father would do to a son. And so like we've seen this relationship, and it's obvious that David's going to take after Maine and like the same ideas of like protecting his team. And, you know, so he's sacrificing himself here because he wants to keep Maine and Dario safe.
Yeah.
And he does that every episode. He uses the Sandy, overuses it because he's trying to keep people safe. Last episode, he uses it to keep Lucy and Dario, like the distract the robots to keep Lucy and Dario safe enough to shut down the drones. Mm-hmm. He uses it to get away in like the car and make sure that the job gets done. He uses it countless times in episode 4 to save Rebecca in the middle of like being in trouble. Like he's using his Sandy, overusing it to keep the team safe. He's going down the same path.
Because to him, protecting the people around him is the most important thing. It's not about his life anymore. What does his life
matter?
He wasn't
able to protect his mom.
Yeah.
I'm sure that has that pushed him over that hill there.
Okay. When David reaches Maine and sees all of the destruction, he is drenched in sweat. His nose is bleeding from overusing the Sandy again, but he stands his ground. And he tells Maine he will help take on MaxTech. And he holds his gun out and it is shaking. He holds it for several beats in the episode, just going, yelling over and over again, like, "I'm here to help. I'll get you out of this." And Maine puts his massive hand over the gun and says, "You can't do it. Go. Fast is what you do best." Ugh. And that's where it comes into that I think David believes this is his second biggest failure, is not being able to save Maine. It just breaks my heart. and how well those little, just like their lines, their little pieces of dialogue that thread throughout the whole episode of, you know, I need your support. I need you to tell me that I can do this. Your faith in me is what is going to get me through this. And then at the end, Maine saying, you can't do this yet. You can't do it now. It's poor David. Poor David.
Yep. And I mean, this is like a, this is the kind of the same thing. Like, again, hearkening back to that of, you know, it's not wrong to, if it makes you stronger for yourself or your team. And, you know, he wasn't at that point where he could save his team in this situation. And the only reason he makes it out of this when Maine blows up all of those containers is because he has the Sandy, because he can go fast. And even then we see him at the very end, he's charred. He barely got out of that explosion.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's like just another like small detail of these things of like showing us, because this is, frankly, this is like where the series turned for me. Like, we kind of know throughout what we're watching of like what, you know, the concept, the themes, where the story is going. But like all of the other ones are very like, even though they have bad moments or like, you know, moments that are like sad or very serious. So like episode 5 with talking with Kurosaki. But this here, there was no, like, other than grow a chrome spine, there's no levity in this episode. Mm-mm. It's like, and maybe like the music blaring in the car.
Yeah.
Like those are the two moments. Those are like the fraction of a second things that give us like a moment of being like in the entire like serious dark tone of this episode. But
it was a really sweet moment too. Okay. The sweet moment where David makes a trip back into the building to grab a blanket for Lucy because she'd been net running, so she's naked, and he throws her in the car and then runs back and gets a blanket for her. I was like, aw, he loves her. It's just like one of those sweet little boyfriend touching things.
Mm. And one thing, another like last kind of thing I want to talk about, because we did talk about like cyberpsychosis and what Maine's kind of reasoning for doing all this stuff. But the moments we see of like not being completely gone. Mm-hmm. Because obviously Maine's losing it the whole time. Doryo dies trying to get a final immunoblocker in him to bring him back down. And then he realizes what he's done, this like, you know, that he killed her, which, you know, they don't show us a whole lot, but I mean, they were together. They were in a relationship, presumably in love. And so, you know, finding out that you did that, like, or in the fact that you killed all of these people around you, because he wakes up and he says, did I do this? He was so far gone, he didn't realize what he was doing. And then it's kind of like, it only lasts that like fraction of a second, really, because then he just starts going and just absolutely brutally murdering all of the NCPD, like, yeah, using Tanaka's body as a weapon. And so, and it even shows like the, just that like shift of the way they did things, covering him in like the red of like the blood, like in the way he was like walking like sideways down the hall, the lumbering, they really like switched the way it showed of like, you know, him being himself and then him tipping that edge,
yeah,
into full cyberpsychosis. But even then, David brings him back for a little bit. Just that emotional connection that he has to David, mm-hmm, brings him back for just like a moment, long enough to like tell David that he needs to get out of there.
Because Maine knows that he's not getting out of it. Like, Maine is going to die. He even said at one point, I can't run anymore. The Reaper has my name. Or something along those lines. And it's just for him to have the moment of clarity at the end, knowing that David is going to get out of there.
And that's where, like, that symbolism of, like, his hallucination comes in. Where he was running from the Reaper. He was running from his end, trying to be fast enough to get away from this thing that was destined to happen to him. And realizing that it didn't matter how fast he went, he was still going to reach the end of the road. And, like, which in his hallucination, he stops at the end of that road.
Do you think that's why he wanted the Sandevistan for himself? Was because he wanted to be able to run faster than his problems?
Yeah, I think so.
Stupid anime is going to make me cry all over again.
It's already made us cry. It's fine. It's already made us cry. But yeah, so shall we go to a mid-break, Jen, before we actually do?
Yeah. I agree. We need to take a mid-break to digest all of that and roll some hit dice in order to recover the emotional damage points we've taken so far.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, I'm going to dry off the tears and thank all of our 14 Amazeball patrons. Seriously, huge shout outs. You guys are amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the support. Major loves. And we got a new review in from Australia, dude. That's cool. Right?
Dang, all right.
Yeah, it reads, great, game was awesome, Edgerunners anime was brilliant, 5 stars, left to us by Robbie Fitz, AU, via Apple Podcasts in Australia. I need more from this universe. Don't listen to the haters and the trolls, this is my favorite franchise right now. Thanks for giving us a podcast. Well, you're welcome.
Thanks for giving us a review.
Yeah. And if you would like your reviews read out on this show, please go ahead and follow us on iTunes, leaving a 5-star rating there. You can also do it on Audible. Audible leaves, you can write word reviews there. Or you can leave it in the Discord saying, hey, I loved the show. Here's what I think about it. We'll read those out too. Why not? You can join our Discord at robotsradio.net. And find the links to it in there. Or you can join us here on our live stream every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And that is twitch.tv/cyberpunklorecast. Got anything you want to add to our little mid-break?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. All right. Let's get back into it. All right, we are coming back to episode 7, and it is titled after the Kanye West song Stronger from his 2007 album Graduation. I looked at the lyrics, and I also think that some of Britney Spears' Stronger would have also fit, but Kanye's music and style is a little bit more cyberpunk than Britney. Yeah, I mean, I love my Britney, but... the music video's badass, but I don't think that the song really fits cyberpunk all that well.
I don't remember if I've heard that song. Probably.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm stronger than yesterday. Now it's nothing but my way. My
that's all we can do. Because... Don't get us DMCA, please.
We're not monetized. It would be bad. We're not monetized on Twitch, so we can't get to.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
You can help us get monetized, though, by following us at twitch.tv/cyberpunklorecast.
Yeah, I just set that one up. I see. Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. So, anyways, as for summary of this episode, this one's not as in depth as the last one. Thank God. We need a kind of a little bit of a break. It's not going to last long, but we need like a little bit. So, starts off them all going on a job. We got David, Becca, Kiwi, Falco, who we like saw Falco in the last episode, but he wasn't talking yet. I think he like grunts. I don't think he says anything. I think he grunts.
No, he also punches Maine in the face and knocks him out, which was shocking.
Yeah, yeah. But he grunts as he does that. But yeah. Other than that, we haven't like really heard from him yet. And then like this new rookie solo who's working for Wakako and really wanted to hook up with David. And we see that David is cybered out. He has. Yeah. Yeah. He's got everything. He's got Maine's arms now, which I didn't mention in the last episode. The last thing we see is David gets in the car. He's all scorched up. He's got Maine's arm and they like drive off and he sheds a tear. But now he's got those. He's installed them. He's installed a whole lot of other stuff. And it looks like he's kind of like a well-known, well-established edge runner now. He's got his whole crew, people wanting to work with him. And, you know, I would just like to state small little fact here, you know, because like I watched this in the dubbed. It's like it's set in California. Like I know a lot of people snobby about like animes and watching subbed over dubbed, which like I get that. I do that. But this is set in California. I think the dubbed is fine. It kind of makes more sense. And I was also happy with it because Falco was voiced by Matt Mercer, and I was very happy about it. I always get excited when I hear it because I can recognize his voice from at any point. So it was super cool. He sounds just like good old Cassidy in Overwatch 2. He was playing that cowboy accent. But anyways, they go do a job, wipe out like a whole slew of Maelstrom, and we get to see more of David's like enhancements. He got like fancy jumping feet now, which I think probably pretty similar to the ones we can get in 2077. So it might have been the same model, but I didn't miss it. And they finish that up pretty easily. Then they go hang out, party a little bit. David's like, you know, I got to get out of here, stop by the Ripper Docks. And we see this shot during the Ripper Docks scene of like, there's nothing Gannic left. Like, except maybe his skin, but honestly, I don't even think it is. His legs were not. Like, from like the knees down, they were like plastic looking, or like, I don't know, maybe that real, I know real skin coating is like a thing, but they like, I mean, his feet weren't even feet. They were like bouncing pads or something. Like, he doesn't even have regular feet anymore. So he's all cybered out. And he's asking for more. And even the Ripper Doc says that he's never seen a kid get quite this Borged out. Specifically using the term Borg, which is significant. And then he heads home. See that Lucy's like kind of doing net running stuff. And then proceed all of the nudity for the next two episodes. They don't wear clothes anymore.
No, nope.
Apparently. Because Lucy's like fully naked, he's fully naked, they don't care. They got a fancy new apartment, like on like the penthouse looking. It kind of looks like, I don't know, I haven't been in it enough. It kind of looks like the mayor's office, or the dude running for mayor in 2077. That same guy. This looks like his house, sort of. Like with the way it's set up, like very high building windows kind of thing. Instead, I think the mayor's is like fancier. And then they're talking a little bit. He's trying to like buy her things, like, you know, new net running chair, like net running bodysuit. She's like, no. And then she tells him, let's get out of the city for a bit. And they go sit out in the Badlands under the stars, which they can see because they're far enough out away from the light pollution. And they're kind of like talking, and David starts pushing to kind of like know more about her. Because we see this, they're living together. They like have like a life together, but like she's not working in the group anymore. She's decided not to do that. And like he hasn't even learned that much about her. And we find out that she was a trained Arasaka agent from very young, trained to be a netrunner by them. And because of that, she's one of the best netrunners out there. And she was part of a very select elite group.
I am so sorry. I was looking up the information.
What the hell? I was so confused.
An ad started playing on the website that I'm on because it describes the exact location of their David and Lucy's apartment. It is a specific one.
Is it just like the Corpo one?
Right. You cannot access this apartment unless you complete the game to reach the specific ending that allows V to return with Pan Am to Night City.
Oh, it's that one. Okay, yeah. So like the legendary fixer of Night City thing, like whatever you... Okay, yeah. I've never done that ending, so I'm not as familiar. I've seen videos, but haven't seen it like super up close. But that makes sense. I can kind of click that together. But yeah, so find out she's elite netrunner, trained, and then she basically finished their training, and Arasaka just like put them underground and just made them go into the net every single day, into the old net that passed the black wall, and having to fight like Raish Bartmas's like rabid's virus, essentially. They're trying to look for data from the old net that they can use, because that's kind of like what every major netrunner wants to do, is get beyond the black wall and see what's there. And a lot of people died because of it, because those demons that are on that side fry your brain instantly, and they are super strong. And so they all kind of, the ones that were left, banded together and ran. And it's giving us the impression that she's the only one that made it out.
Mm-hmm.
And she woke up Night City and joined up with the group, essentially.
Yeah, so we get to find out a lot about Lucy, and kind of where she came from and how she joined the squad. That's all at the end of the episode. I do have a couple little tidbits to sprinkle in throughout your summary. I think the funniest line that I heard was from Becca, of course, my girl, when David says that he's going to go back to the Ripper Dock. She yells at him and says, "Stay here dancing, or tell him that you need to get the laser pop hip grind dance chip installed." And like, that is so Becca to ask for that. The laser pop hip grind. I think we can find out what kind of dancing that is quite easily. And then I also wanted to point out that since he got Main's rocket launcher arm gun thingy installed, he now is carrying two pieces of gear from Known Psychos.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's rough.
I don't know if you've ever heard the theory that if you get like a transplant from another human, that sometimes, you know, it's like the horror story. My hand is doing things I don't want it to do.
Yeah.
Are there imprints on mechanics?
I think you're asking a very 2077 question right there.
Yeah.
Imprints on mechanics?
Okay, well,
yeah, there is. I don't think it's the same degree, but I mean, it is possible.
Yeah.
It's sort of a sense of like knowing that there's built-in Brain Dance recording software on the Sandevistan. There's an imprint, like recordings of like what Norris had done.
Yeah.
It's just kind of an imprint.
You also kind of glossed over the fact that now David is got a new job from Faraday. So Faraday is back in the picture.
Right. Right. He's back in the picture. He's hiring David to do... he's still trying to get the information that he was trying to get from Tanaka. And he needs a really good netrunner for that. And he heard that there was an incredibly good netrunner team that wasn't Kiwi. And so David tries to dance around it a little bit because Lucy doesn't want to jump back into the game yet. So he's trying to like kind of play it off or say like, you know, I'll see what we can do or something.
Because I had the question of, is being part of Faraday's crew creepy eye requirement? Because the dude that had the honeycomb eyes, he freaked me out.
They kind of all freak me out because they're not even like, they don't even have, like, they don't do anything through the duration. Like, it's like he's just there. Like, that guy literally does nothing. Even to like the point, like, even up to episode 10, he does nothing, but he's always there with Faraday.
I have a comment on something that he is used for, but we will get there when we get there. I'll have to remember.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but even then, he doesn't do anything.
No.
He's just the shell.
No, I wasn't even talking about that. There's something that happens later. We'll sidebar on that after this. Yeah. Oh, okay. While he was outside of the city with Lucy, we hear him laugh. And it felt so good because it sounded like the old David. The old David was laughing. Or I guess the young David, because his whole demeanor has changed. He's now switched to, I'm leader, I am badass, and even like his voice has gotten a little bit lower, and the cadence is now a little bit slower and more thought out. And then when he's with Lucy, just the two of them outside of the city, he laughs.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that same kind of like, even just playing the game of like, there's so much going on inside the city. So to like go out into like the Badlands area, I mean, I think a lot of people can agree just like that the most home feeling that anyone gets playing 2077 is with like the Aldecaldos.
Mm-hmm.
Being outside the city and like being in like, you know, that group, that family, like, yeah. You know, it's to get away from Night City. And that's like kind of the goal for a lot of people. I mean, look how many characters in either the show or the game we see that want to leave. Pan Am, regardless of the ending you choose, will always leave. Judy, regardless of the ending you choose, will always leave, or maybe worse, depending on certain choices. Yes, it could be worse, but like she still leaves. They like there's so many people leave, get out.
Yeah,
so
because it's like a prison, a cage of lights, which was my favorite Lucy line for the episode.
Yep. It's like they're basically saying that it's like a pretty cage. It's a cage that a lot of people choose to be in, but it's still a cage nonetheless.
Yep. And then my last little line here is, oh, Lucy, you got some splaining to do. Did you touch on what Lucy does at the end?
Yeah. So at the end of the episode, we kind of get, I can't remember specifically who's talking. I think we're starting to look at those two individuals who I don't know if we ever learned their names. The character that looks like they need to be a Pokemon gym leader, and her sidekick.
It's Team basically Rocket. Just
she does. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think she looks like Commander. She looks like she looks like Commander Mars from Team Galactic and like the fourth generation. But anyways, they're kind of talking about like, some weird stuff going on with, like, they've like tagged the signature of this netrunner who got into Tanaka, and then kind of are getting confirmation, and then we just see Lucy absolutely fry, dude, who is basically shown to be like an Arasaka netrunner. She finds him, fries his brain, and he is dead. And they even do like the creepy like eye thing, like red eyes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
What the? Okay. I got a little worried for that because I was like, is she like, I don't think she's cybered out that much to be like doing that, but find out that there's a bit more behind that.
Yeah. Okay. And now another sad one. Episode 8 is titled
Huh? Yet not sad, Jin. This the rest of them are sad. The rest of them are sad. This was our break that we got, was episode 7. We don't get another one.
I know. But specifically, like, with the song title for the episode is Stay by Rihanna, from her 2013 album Unapologetic. In the right mood, this song alone can make me cry, let alone thinking about the episodes.
Yeah. So this one, we get a bit more into the start of it, where we kind of see these two individuals talking. They're Arasaka. And then this lady like comes into the room to just splattered brain and head matter all over the place. And David is like huddled on the floor, like freaking out. And then she like makes a noise and he turns the gun on her and puts a bullet in her as well. And we see that his eyes are like glowing. It definitely makes it look a little bit more, but he's like on the phone. Specifically, he's on the phone. And that detail is there. This is very important for a reason. We get intro. Then it shows David rejoining the group. Apparently there was like a breakdown in communication, which was not the case. We see essentially the idea is that the cyberpsychosis is starting to hit him. He's starting to hallucinate, lose time, stuff like that. It's bad. And we see this as we go like through the episode of like seeing David like being just at home, not sleeping, which is probably another symptom. It's generally insomnia, symptom of neurodivergencies. And then kind of just like zoning himself out. We see that his hand is starting to shake, the same hand. Mm-hmm. Specifically, this one's rough, dude. And then I'm sorry. No, like it's just hard to like now that I'm thinking of. Me and Jen watched an emotional like a music video before this, specifically about the show. So I was like, fuck. Basically, he's losing it. Lucy's kind of doing the same thing of trying to get him to like tone it back. But like he's himself around her, which I think is both like kind of heartening, but also heartbreaking of like whenever she comes around, he kind of snaps out of his funk. And then one night, she wakes up. He's kind of zoned out. He's staring at his mom's ashes and the picture of them. And then he just straight collapses. So she takes him to the Ripper Doc. Ripper Doc's, you know, telling him, hey, you have too much. You need to tone it back. But like David starts hallucinating. He looks like it makes the Ripper Doc look like a spider. Like all like the lights on his like glasses and stuff are all lit up like a spider. His hand's doing weird, like his mechanical hand is like wiggling across him, which is like terrifying. And David just slams him up against the wall and tells him, like, you know, just give me the medicine. I'm fine. Basically, there's that denial. Same thing we saw with Maine. We're just seeing a mirror of all the Maine of, you know, I'm fine. Just give me, I just need the medicine. That's all I need. Lucy wakes up. She's fallen asleep in the chair because she's so damn tired and sees that this is happening, manages to pull David back to himself, and the Ripper Doc gives him the strongest, like, military grade immunoblockers they got and tells him, you know, like, this is 9 days worth, the strongest shit you can get. But once that's done, you're done. There's no coming back if you go down this route. And it's like even heartbreaking to see because like this Ripper Doc's been an asshole the entire time. And it's granted, he's profiting off of this kid who's making him money, which, you know, in the setting like Night City, who's not going to do that? Like, you know, David's made him so much money, especially once he decided to Borg out, essentially. But like, even then he sees like even the Ripper Doc is sad to see it. And like, even like the line, like, another turn for the next dreamer. But, and then we talk about, and you're kind of the expert on this, so you want to talk about the fight?
The fight between Lucy and David?
Yeah. You're the romance expert here.
That doesn't make me the relationship argument expert. I try to avoid those.
I'm just saying you have to take an opinion on their fight.
Yeah.
But
the argument that we see, David, you know, he switches back to his a little bit of normal David because he's having personal one-on-one interaction with Lucy. But and he asks her, hey, have you thought about coming back onto the team? And she says, no, I need more time. Now, we know that she needs more time because she's out there killing Netrunners, but she hasn't told David any of that. So there's a huge secret wall between them. Yeah. And David takes that as, you don't want to come back to the team. You don't want to come back to me. Does that mean we should go our separate ways?
And he specifically says one thing of like he asks her, and he says, because you don't trust me. And like, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's so many different opinions about what's the most important thing in a relationship. Like, what's the most important thing between two people that love each other? And regardless of like what answer you choose in a situation, you better damn well put communication and honesty near the top of those lists. And right now, they're not really vibing on either of those. Like, they're not communicating, or she's not communicating to him why she won't come back to the team. She mm-hmm. won't tell him about the reason. He's not communicating really why it's so important that he goes down this path either.
Yeah.
Because he's just saying, don't tell the team. Like, you know, I freaked out. Don't tell the team about it. He's not telling her, like, you know, I have to do this to keep them safe. Like, so they're not talking about it. And they're that because they haven't been truthful with one another, too. So, yeah.
No.
So they.
They're hiding big secrets from each other. And it definitely takes the toll. Keeping something like that from your significant other, keeping something like that from your friends, your teammate, the people who depend on you. It's not good. It's not good.
I mean, we even see, like, I mean, he says, don't tell the team. Honestly, you should probably tell the team. Because, like, look what happened. Maine didn't tell the team. And he ended up hurting members of his team because of it. And so, like, but yeah, David says, like, do we need to go our separate ways? And Lucy really doesn't want that. She like, she's like, she has like a like visceral response to that. But oh, yeah. The moment that she goes to actually kind of like open up, she gets like, I'm guessing she's kind of like tapped into the net or something at this point. She gets like a ping of someone's location. One of the netrunners she's going after. So she runs off.
Yeah, she says, we'll talk about this when I get home. And that's like the worst way to end an argument. We'll talk about this later.
Yeah. and she runs off. And unfortunately, she's not going to make it home because that netrunner that she was going after was a trap set by Faraday, who throughout this episode, which I forgot to mention, basically Militech gave him the shaft. He was attacked by people. He asked for more protection. They said, you haven't been giving us the results that you promised. So no, once you get that shit to get your shit together, then we'll rediscuss the terms of this agreement. And Faraday, instead of, you know, saying like, oh, you know, that's fair, I haven't held up my bargain, because he hasn't held up his side of the bargain, he throws essentially a fit and goes running to Militech's number one rival, Arasaka, to try and get his foot in that door. And part of that agreement is that they need someone to test out a thing that they still haven't quite told us about. And they want the Netrunner back. The Netrunner that has been causing them so many problems. And so he sets up this trap for Lucy, gets Lucy. And we see who helped him with this trap.
Oh, freaking Kiwi. Are you kidding me? She is even the one who said it. She's said it at least twice throughout the series ahead of time. Never trust a soul in Night City. And now we know why. Because she's a backstabbing little biatch.
Yep. I mean, it's, even to be fair, like Maine said at episode 3, don't rely on anyone. Just like yourself. That's all you can rely on. Kiwi has taken that to heart.
So mad.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's end on a lighter tone. We now have gone through, it looks like David and Lucy are going to break up, and Lucy gets fucking kidnapped by Faraday and Kiwi. So on a lighter note, I loved when they, so throughout, at the beginning of the episode, they're doing more gigs, more jobs, and they're talking, David is hooking up with a lot of different fixers in Night City, and we know a lot of them. I think we saw Wakako a few episodes ago. We saw,
I don't think we saw her, but we did talk to her. He did call her to let her know that that her rookie solo got killed by a bomb.
Yeah.
Because he was too eager.
Julio. I don't know why I can remember his name, but nobody else's apparently. Regina. We saw Regina.
Oh shit, I did not notice that.
Mm-hmm. She was one of the fixers that he talks to.
Okay.
Oh, and then there was one other one, name blanking. Anyways, there was, oh, the diner that Faraday and that guy we're talking at, the James of the Team Rocket duo.
Yeah.
Was that the same diner that you and Takamura eat at?
I believe so. It's either that diner or the one that you and River eat at. Because there's like two diners. I'm trying to remember specifically. I think it might be the one that you and River eat at.
Okay. I mean, they look kind of similar, so it could be.
Yeah, hard. Yeah. But yeah. It's hard to remember because like, I think it shows out the window. But there's not open space on the Takamura one. Because like, there's windows, but like, it goes out right onto like clustered street, like it's kind of like wedged in between buildings, but the one you go out with River, the windows point out over, not the marina, but like over the water. Mm-hmm. Which is actually like clear space where you can see, you know, the sky.
Those were my only lighthearted things for this episode.
Yeah, because it's not lighthearted.
I know, I tried
and it only gets worse. Are you ready for 9 and 10, Jen?
No, I am not.
Me neither. Don't worry about it. Me neither.
But I so totally am too. They were so good. And I hope that you join us next week when we talk about them in all of their fantastic glory. Episode 9 and 10 we will cover next week, as well as our overall review for the series and some things that we think need to be called out. There's a couple of parts that we didn't like. And, like, I think I want to get into some good, like, philosophical questions. Like, go into the what ifs, or, yeah, go into the what ifs. So, where you can find us on the internet, we have already talked about joining the Discord, but you can also follow us on Twitter at CyberpunkLore. And, of course, you can also find me in my other show, hosted between me and Rivada, it's Two Girls, One Ship, where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer.
Including the cyberpunk ones. And I am also the host of the Witcher Lorecast, also on the Robots Radio Network. You could follow that over there and follow that Twitter, Witcher Lorecast.
And, of course, a shout-out to the amazing Miracle of Sound, whose music we use for all of the intro, mid-break, and outro now. So go check him out on YouTube for playlists for all your favorite video games. Some that I haven't mentioned yet. Resident Evil. He does a lot of songs about Resident Evil. Yeah. There is a song that lives rent-free in my brain called Wiggle Sticks. You hear it once and it never leaves. So Toast is going to go listen to that right after this episode. But as always,
stay safe in Night City.
Do you love Dragon Age? Have you always wanted to learn more about its vast world and detailed lore? Are you still attached to your hero of Ferelden, even a decade after Dragon Age Origins came out? Or maybe you're a newer fan, still discovering a new tidbit or quest every day.
Well, either way, the Dragon Age Lorecast is the podcast for you. I'm Austin, also known as Teacup.
And I'm Shelby, also known as SheCup.
And come and join us as we embark on a journey to explore and discover all things Dragon Age.
We'll discuss all kinds of topics, from Lyrium to the Chantry and the great mysteries of the old gods, and even more that even you BioWare superfans might not know about.
So come and listen on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And always remember,
Swooping.